first week of February. Adam Lepp reporting for The Talking Place.
Good afternoon. This is Pastor Craig, and this is Study His Word. Thank you for joining me this afternoon. If you're just tuning in, I appreciate it. If you listened last hour, I don't know how I get roped into those things. It was a wild time here, but it always is in 12 o'clock hour with the Exchange Club, so thank you for being here. I do not have a guest today. I will have a couple of guests next Friday that we're going to be talking about something that's kind of important. But today what I wanted to do was what I like to do once a month, and that is review some of the news stories that we've had over the last couple weeks that are typically not covered by the major media, but they're news stories that directly affect us, the Christians out here in the world. So I thought I would go over them to keep you informed on what's been happening. There is a large controversy that has been brewing and is getting attention from all different angles, and that is about something that Alistair Begg had said. If you're not familiar with Alistair Begg, Alistair Begg is the pastor at Parkside Community Church in Cleveland, Ohio, and he's a nationally known pastor. His radio show is carried on, I don't know how many stations, but I know it's in the hundreds of stations, and he has a very large ministry. He's actually an extremely good Bible teacher, so he's very well known. So let's get right to it, because there are actually three stories relating to this that I want to cover, and I will give my opinion at various times in here, and I will tell you when it is my opinion, but this is basically what's going on. Pastor and author Alistair Begg has ignited a social media debate within the faith community for advising a Christian grandmother to attend the wedding of her grandson to a transgender person. Begg's comments came in a September interview about his new book, The Christian Manifesto, but went largely unnoticed until recent days. Church leaders reported on the remarks. Begg is senior pastor at Parkside Church near Cleveland, Ohio, and is heard daily on his radio program, Truth for Life. His advice to the grandmother came with several caveats. This is a quote. "We field questions all the time that go along the lines of, my grandson is about to be married to a transgender person, and I don't know what to do about this, and I'm calling to ask you to tell me what to do, which is a huge responsibility. And in conversation like that just a few days ago, and people may not like this answer, but I asked the grandmother, does your grandson understand your belief in Jesus? And her answer was yes. Does your grandson understand that your belief in Jesus makes it such that you cannot countenance in any affirming way the choices that he has made in life? Her answer was yes. I said, well then, okay. As long as he knows that, then I suggest that you do go to the ceremony, and I suggest that you buy them a gift. Oh, she said, what? She was caught off guard. I said, well, here's the thing. Your love for them may catch them off guard, but your absence will simply reinforce the fact that they said, these people are what I always thought, judgmental, critical, unprepared to countenance anything. Begg added, referencing his advice, we're going to have to take that risk a lot more if we want to build bridges into the hearts and lives of those who don't understand Jesus and don't understand that he is King. Begg's book, The Christian Manifesto, examines Jesus' sermon in Luke 6, which is sometimes called the Sermon on the Plain. The book, according to a summary on Begg's website, navigates us through the challenging instruction Jesus gives about forgiveness, integrity, obedience, and blessedness that turns our value system upside down. So, that is what Alistair Begg's response was to the grandma who had questioned him about it. Now, this elicited a response from American Family Radio, which American Family Radio is one of the large networks that has programs carried on multiple stations. This is their response. American Family Radio drops Alistair Begg over LGBTQ wedding comments. And here's the article. American Family Radio announced this week that it has dropped Alistair Begg's Truth for Life program after he made much debated comments about an LGBTQ wedding and after the two sides were unable to reconcile on the issue. Pastor Begg's program will no longer air on American Family Radio, AFR Vice President Ed Vitigliano told American Family News. He is an excellent Bible teacher. We certainly wish him the best. And then it carries that portion of the dialogue that I just read to you. And then let's see. Vitigliano said AFR representatives had a phone call with Truth for Life representatives. We were all in agreement that homosexual marriage is just as the Bible declares it. It's a faux marriage. Vitigliano said it's not an actual marriage. It is a sinful union. The two sides, Vitigliano added, could not reach an agreement on the issue of wedding advice. This is a critical issue in the body of Christ right now, Vitigliano told American Family News. And this is not only the wrong counsel, but is deeply disturbing for Christians who want to hold the line against the cultural impact of the LGBTQ agenda. So after his comments, Begg, his show got dropped by radio. And I want to read you just one more, and then I'll give you my thoughts. Let's see. All right. Christians should never attend a gay wedding, theologian Carl Truman asserts. Theologian and author Carl Truman asserts in a new column that Christians should never attend an LGBT wedding because to do so is to affirm the relationship and to make a mockery of a central New Testament teaching and of Christ himself. Truman, a professor of biblical and theological studies at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, and the author of The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self and several other books, says in his column for First Things that the question of whether Christians can attend a gay wedding is becoming more frequent as society grows more secular. It is not hard to guess what reasons a Christian might give for attending a gay wedding. A desire to indicate to the couple that one does not hate them or wish to avoid causing offense or hurt. But if either carries decisive weight in the decision, then something has gone awry. Truman writes, Christians, though, should not attend a gay wedding, Truman argues. Whatever the alleged gains that might be made by showing the couple a morally amorphous form of love or by avoiding giving offense, the price of attendance is huge, he writes. Much has been made of the perplexity shown by the Pope's recent statement about blessing gay couples. Just as momentous for individuals and churches could be the confusion sown by a failure to think clearly about attending gay weddings. After all, attendance so as to show love or avoid giving offense is a form of blessing just without the name. There are, Truman writes, multiple reasons why a Christian should decline to attend. Many wedding liturgies, including that of the Book of Common Prayer, require the officiant to ask early in the service if anyone present knows any reason why the couple should not be joined together in matrimony. He writes, a Christian is at that point obliged to speak up. I would hazard a guess that such an intervention would be far more offensive than simply refusing to be at the service. The issue can also be separated from the broader question of sex, gender, and human nature, he writes. If marriage is rooted in the complementary of the sexes, then any marriage that challenges the Christian understanding of creation. It is one thing for the world to do that. It is quite another for Christians to acquiesce in the same. Declining to attend a gay wedding is not a sign of hatred. So a lot has been said on this topic, and it is a big topic that we are dealing with in the church today. And these are my personal feelings. I would be more on the line of agreement with Carl Truman in that I feel that a person who holds the belief that this grandmother held, a person who holds strong biblical beliefs, should not attend a gay wedding. I think, as Carl Truman pointed out, that just the mere fact that you're in attendance at the wedding does indicate your affirmation of it. And as he makes the point, there, in most of the times, not always, but in most situations, there is that time when they say, if anybody has an objection, you know, speak up. And that does put you in a bad position. I think that Alistair Begg made a valid point that by not attending, that gives the people in the wedding the opportunity to say, that person is closed-minded and they're hateful and all that kind of stuff. I believe what you can do in that situation is not attend the wedding. However, I think it would also be nice if sometime afterward or sometime before, if you reach out to the couple and offer to have lunch with them, either at your house or at another place, have a nice lunch or dinner with the couple. And it's more of a setting where you would have an opportunity to let them know that you don't agree with what they're doing, but you certainly can show them that you're not interested in cutting off the relationship, of not having a relationship, that you do love them. And I think it would be appropriate to not go, but to also not cut off ties. You do want to stay in contact with them, and you do want to have a chance to be involved in their life, even though you aren't agreeing with what they do. Now, excuse me. I have to say something about American Family Radio and their decision to drop Alistair Begg's program. I believe that was a bad decision on their part. They actually said that, you know, he was giving bad advice. Do they listen to every program on their stations every episode? Because I can tell you, this isn't the first time that they what they would deem as bad advice has been given by a pastor on their radio station. And they've kind of set a precedence that they are the final arbitrators of what is good advice and bad advice, and that if you give what they deem as bad advice, they're going to drop you from the radio. And I find that kind of troubling, because I know that there have been, if you've got two pastors that give different advice, then somebody's wrong in your eyes. And to drop him, I think is a little bit harsh. But there again, it shows how volatile this whole, you know, gender ideology and the whole LGBTQ ideology has created controversy within the church. And the bad part about it is, because you have churches that are clearly in support of the LGBTQ community, you have lesbian and gay ministers being ordained in certain denominations. And the question is, where do you draw the line? And I think it's safe to say you can draw the line on what does the Bible say, and you can use that as your criteria for weeding out those churches or pastors, etc., that are not going to be on your radio program. But when you get down to, you know, you're splitting hairs over everybody's in agreement on where we stand on the biblical principle here, but we just think you gave bad advice. I think that's very dangerous. And I would seriously hope that American Family Radio reconsiders their decision. Because it's almost like they've picked a small battle. They've picked the wrong hill to die on. So that's just my opinion on it, but we'll see what happens in the future on that. Let's see. So I've got a couple other things here. This is an interesting story. Muslims in Gaza come to Christ after seeing Jesus in dreams. Report says it was a miracle. Numerous Muslim men in Gaza came to Christianity in recent days after seeing Jesus in their dreams in what is being described as a miracle, according to a new report from underground Christians in the region. The report was first posted online by author and Christian apologist Michael Lacona, who said, "God is working in the midst of war." Lacona is a professor of New Testament studies at Houston Christian University and the author of multiple books, including The Case for the Resurrection of Jesus and Paul Meets Muhammad. The report, he said, was coming out of Palestine from underground Christian ministries. Over the past 2 days, the report from the ministry said, "We have ministered to hundreds of fathers who have lost most, if not all, of their children in the war. As we moved these men to safety, we fed them, washed their clothes, and began to read the Bible to them, sharing the way of peace through Jesus," the report said. Then a big miracle happened. Last night, Jesus appeared to more than 200 of them in their dreams. They have come back to us to learn more from God's word and are asking how to follow Jesus. Lycona said the report should be celebrated by Christians all over the world. "I side with Israel in this war, not necessarily for the theological reasons, but because Hamas and those backing it are pure evil," he wrote. "Yet I know that not all Palestinians support Hamas. In fact, they will be punished severely if even suspected of not supporting Hamas. Let's pray that that this war can be over soon and that Israel can eradicate Hamas so that Palestine can be free of Hamas." Christians in Gaza account for less than 1% of the population, according to a 2012 report from the Institute of Middle East Understanding. While that report estimated that the number of Christians in Gaza to be around 3,000, the population today could be 1,000 or less, according to Al Jazeera. You know, I find this kind of interesting because I'll be honest with you, 10 or 15 years ago, I would have been maybe a little bit skeptical about stories about Muslims seeing Jesus in dreams. But I have read and heard numerous accounts over the last several years coming out of the Muslim world of this type of thing happening about Muslims seeing Jesus in their dreams. And what's interesting about that is it is one of the leading reasons why Muslims are turning to Christianity, why Muslims are getting saved, why Muslims are turning to Jesus. Of all the reports coming out of the Middle East, the number one reason of why Muslims convert is they seem to share a common experience of seeing Jesus in their dreams. And it just goes to show us, you know, the dreams, these dreams that they're having are not typical of the way God communicated through dreams in the Old Testament. He had a different way of communicating through dreams then. And even up until the time of Jesus. But I think these are real. I have absolutely no reason to doubt it. And it's just goes to show that God can use whatever method he feels necessary to use to reach people. We don't have near the reports, here in America. I mean, there are a few people who I've met who have said that, that they had a dream, but it's not typical. We're over there. This seems to be the typical way. So, you know, hey, I think it's great. Praise God. All right. Over 30 Christians slaughtered in central Nigeria. And this is, you know, something that I have been sharing with you for the last 2 years about the situation in Nigeria. Nigeria is one of the most, the countries with one of the highest rates of persecutions for Christians, especially Muslims converting to Christians. So here's the story. Fulani herdsmen and other terrorists attacked villages in Plateau State, Nigeria, January 24th, killing at least 25 Christians, following the deaths of six others last week's area resident said. Thousands of people were displaced in the attacks in Mangu County that began on Monday, residents said. My village, a Christian community, was attacked at about 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday, January 24th, by terrorists and herdsmen, Hosea Ibrahim told the Christian Daily International Morning Star News in a text message. The invaders surrounded the village at about midnight, and they shot at anyone they sighted. 25 Christians, who were mostly women and children, were killed during the attack. Senator Plang of Nigeria's parliament said in a statement today that the killings resulted from unprovoked attacks on innocent citizens. He called on the armed forces and all the security apparatus to live up to their sworn duty to protect the citizens of Nigeria, and especially the people of Mangu LGA at this trying moment. He urged authorities to investigate the attacks and ensure that culprits face the full force of the law. Let's see. The attack was part of a coordinated assault, began on Monday in that village and surrounding towns. A friend's family, five members of his family, were killed and burnt beyond recognition on Tuesday, a resident identified only as Murphy told the Christian Daily International Morning Star News. The wicked will never stop unless they have reasons to think twice before attacking. These are not random attacks, but well coordinated to exterminate Christians. Let's see. In a different county, Fulani herdsmen and other terrorists killed six Christians on January 17th, and it kind of goes into some detail there. But one of the important things here, since Christmas Eve, such attacks have driven about 19,000 people from their homes, said Pastor Matawal, who provides aid at camps for the internally displaced. Nigeria remains the deadliest place in the world to follow Christ, with 4,118 people killed for their faith from October 1st, 2022 to September 30th, 2023. So in other words, 4,118 Christians were killed for their faith last year. Open Doors 2024 watch list reported more kidnappings of Christians than in any other country also took place in Nigeria with 3,300. Nigeria was also the third highest country in the number of attacks on churches and other Christian buildings such as hospitals, schools, and cemeteries, with 750 buildings being attacked. Let's see. In the 2024 World Watch list of countries where it is most difficult to be a Christian, Nigeria was ranked as number six, as it was the previous year. And then go on and tell about how the millions of people are crossing the border to get away from it. And as I've reported on here before, Nigeria is the worst place to live. And there are a couple of different types of persecution in that part of the world. One, it can come from the government. It can be illegal to be a Christian. And the persecution, killings, throwing in jail, burning of houses, can be carried out by the government itself. Or, as in the case in Nigeria, it's not illegal to be a Christian, and the government isn't necessarily persecuting them, but it also isn't doing a lot to protect them. And you have a situation with the Fulani herdsmen. All that is, Fulani is a Muslim sect that are primarily herds people. They are some of the worst persecutors in the world. There are others, there are other groups that are, but they're one of the worst. And the biggest thing about living in Muslim countries is usually the persecution comes from within your family. And in places like Nigeria, they have the backing of the communities. It's not unusual when a Muslim converts to Christianity, he will immediately, or she, will immediately be ostracized by the family. They'll often be killed by the family. They'll be run out of town. You aren't welcome there. So that's the type of persecution that we're seeing in Nigeria. So again, I would encourage you to be in prayer for Christians in countries where they are heavily persecuted, especially in Nigeria. All right. I have another story here that I wanted to share with you. This one is called The Swinging Twenties. Found this kind of interesting. The Roaring Twenties refers to the 1920s decade in music and fashion as it happened in Western society and Western culture. In France, it was known as the, well, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that because I can't speak French, but in France, it was known as the Crazy Years, emphasizing the era's social, artistic, and cultural Every once in a while, you get one of those words that just trips you up. Dynamism. It was dynamic. It was the area of jazz music and Art Deco. The spirit of the day was clear: to break from the tradition and go modern. All this was accomplished by such novelties as radio. That was in the early heydays of radio. Sound movies. Sound movies were just becoming a thing because it had been silent before that. And, of course, the automobile. And you know what? I never really thought about that. But those three things all kind of came about at the same time. Radio, talking movies, and the automobile. And that was a big thing in the 20s. An accompanying mark of the 20s was social revolution. Chaperones were replaced with anything-goes mentality. A new woman was born, the flapper, who danced, drank, and smoked. You know, it's really kind of interesting when you stop and think about it, you know, how shocking that was. That a new kind of woman, she danced, she drank, and she smoked. Now you just, you know, look at 100 years later, look at today. I mean, you get my point. She was known for taking risks and for her high spirits, flirtation, and recklessness when it came to the search for fun and thrills. Well, we're in the 20s again, but let's say it's less roaring and more swinging. As USA Today notes, open relationships are having a moment. Polyamory, ethical non-monogamy, and similar terms are becoming a bigger part of our cultural lexicon. Yeah, they are becoming a bigger part of our cultural lexicon, because 20 years ago, these words weren't even used. The most common type of open relationship is swinging, and it is having a moment as well. The hashtag swing talk has more than 2.6 billion views on TikTok. That is 2.6 billion with a B views on TikTok, often marked by the symbol of an upside down pineapple. See, if someone showed me, you know, that an upside down pineapple, I would have had no idea that it even meant anything. Anyway, in essence, swinging is when you are in a relationship with someone, but you purposefully seek out and engage others for casual, non-committal sex. Now, this in and of itself is not new from the standpoint of, you know, I remember 50 years ago when, you know, there would be talk about, oh, that couple, they're swingers, and you knew what that meant. But it was a rare kind of thing. And, you know, now it's like, well, very common. In essence, swinging is when you're in a relationship with someone, but you purposefully seek out and engage others for casual, non-committal sex. If a married couple, for example, you hook up with another married couple and exchange partners for sex. One study from the North American Swing Club Alliance said 15% of U.S. couples have tried it at least once in their married life. Now, I find that hard to believe. But knowing where our society and our culture is today, that could very possibly be true. 15% of U.S. couples have tried it at least once. The numbers may be inflated for their own personal reasons. You know, it's the North American Swing Club Alliance. You know, it's to their benefit to show growing numbers. You know, it helps validate their feelings, their agenda. But on the other hand, it's alarming, but it could very possibly be true. Indicative of the swinging nature of the current 20s was a recent article in New York Magazine that offered a practical guide to modern polyamory covering such topics as, how do I broach this with my partner? Where do I meet people? Does my wife want to hear about my night? Should we sleep with them on the first date? Am I being nice enough to my boyfriend's girlfriends? Should we tell our kids? Now, you know, just reading this list of questions, you know, it raises up a couple things. First of all, it's hard for me to comprehend that, you know, these are questions that people are dealing with because of they have this interest. You know, I mean, I can't even conceive of, I mean, thinking about this stuff. But it's a bigger issue. The bigger issue is we have become a very, very self-centered, me, narcissistic society. I mean, stop and think about it. You know, it's all about me, 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 me. Look at how these questions are phrased. How do I broach this with my partner? Where do I meet people? Does my wife want to hear about my night? You know, it's all about me. Nowhere in here is like, you know, I'm not thinking about my wife. I'm not thinking about my marriage. I'm not thinking about our family. You know, should we tell our kids? You know, should we tell our kids that this is what we're doing? I mean, how do you get to that point where that's the question? The question would be, how in the world can I imagine doing something like this when I have a family? But anyway, I guess I'm showing my age. Of particular interest to me was the question, what can go wrong? The biggest concerns were the hierarchy might shift. Extramarital partners become equal or more important. You might become a third wheel. Your partner might date someone who wants you gone. You might tire of your secondary status. They might leave you behind. You might drift apart, or it might just break your relationships. Which leads to the most shocking concern. Your partner might actually realize they'd rather be monogamous. Think about that. Asking those questions might lead to the most shocking concern. Your partner might actually realize they'd rather be monogamous. In other words, that the entire open relationship is no relationship at all, and that what is really needed is a closed relationship built on commitment. Gee, you think? So anyway, and this article goes on. It has other things to say, but you know, it's amazing how our society has devolved the way it has. You know, I can't believe we've gotten to the point that we've gotten to, but We're there. So enough on that. Let's go to the one last article that I wanted to cover here. Now, actually, this is a little bit of hope for the future based on the last story that we covered. Is the rise of religious nuns, that's N-O-N-E-S, is the rise of religious nuns ending? Pew Research finds decline in 2023. The percentage of Americans who say they don't identify with any religion fell 3 points in 2023. According to new Pew Research Center data, that also found that more than two-thirds of nuns, despite their identity, say they believe in God or a higher power. The data released this week shows that the percentage of U.S. adults who identify as atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular declined for an all-time high of 31% in 2022 to 28% in 2023. It's possible the rise of the nuns has ended, but it's too early to say for definitely, Pew said. In two of the last 5 years, we obtained readings above the 28%. And it just goes on and talks about some of the nuns. But so the increase in nuns is actually declining. That's good news. And the number of the percentage of Americans who have a belief in God or a higher power is at a good level. But this is where the church comes in. And this is where we haven't done our job. And that is truly standing for what we believe and standing firm for what we believe and teaching that what we believe is what the Bible says and teaching the Bible. Because unfortunately, as most of you know, that the overall church in America is at in my opinion, it's at an all-time low as far as biblical literacy. I am constantly amazed at the lack of Bible knowledge that the average person sitting in the pew has. And quite honestly, I am also equally amazed at the lack of biblical knowledge that many of the individuals who stand in the pulpit have. And this goes back to where we are in society, that we've come to a point of it's all me, 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 me. The pastorate or the office of minister, whatever, lends itself, if you're not careful, to somewhat narcissistic individuals. If you're a person who has a big ego or a medium ego, something like being a minister or a pastor can be attractive to you. You have an audience. You're in front of a church, and you have an opportunity to increase your audience, and people look up to you. So, you know, if a person is going to be in this position, humility, I think, is a very important thing. And we see a lack of humility in our church today. And quite honestly, we're human beings, and we have to fight things like ego and pride. And it's not easy to be humble. And unfortunately, our society allows people who are on ego trips to be successful and to attract large crowds of people. So I think, you know, the long and the short of it is there is always an opportunity for the church to do better. And I think that those of us who are in the church need to do better. We need to commit ourselves to, You know, if we can say all we want that the Bible is our authority and our church teaches the Bible, but if we personally aren't studying our Bible regularly and aren't using our Bible as a guidebook, then it's just words. But I see a lot of encouraging things on the horizon. The battle is not over, but it is a battle out there. And one, you know, everything has a good and a bad. Social media has good and bad. But one of the benefits of social media is there are opportunities to get good, solid Bible teaching, and there are opportunities for people to call out those churches that aren't doing well. So anyway, I'm about out of time here. I thank you for being with me today and listening to me drone on and on about things in the news. I will be back next Friday. We're having the big Groundhog celebration here from 8 to 11. And then I'll be on with What's Happening, Marion, and then back at 12 with the Exchange Club. And then I'll be back on at 1 o'clock. And I will have two guests next Friday. So I encourage you to be here. In the meantime, have a great weekend. See you next week.
The place for guests like Dean of the White House Press Corps, Helen Thomas.
Helen, how do you deal with criticism? Because certainly 10 presidents, you've had your share of criticism.